Okay, so the basic idea is a horrible hack suitable to frighten small children. I agree completely, but I find it useful anyway, so I'll just talk about it. So what's the basic idea here? So when you're working with a soft synthesizer, you want to tweak parameters in a certain way. So you may do that using the mouse and the keyboard, dragging around little widgets and such. But I usually find it more intuitive if you assign MIDI controllers on a keyboard like this one to parameters on your synthesizer, and then you might ask how you do that. And well, the standard approach seems to be to essentially look at the MIDI specification and say, okay, well, according to MIDI specification, certain controllers are associated with certain parameters, and we'll just map them that way. Eminently reasonable thing to do. On the other hand, Matthias Nagorny's Alza modular synthesizer takes a slightly different approach, and essentially that one says, all right, I'll follow the events that come in, and I'll offer up the parameters that I have, and then you can just click on your click on events that came in and on parameters that you're interested in and associate them with each other on the fly. And I like that a lot because it is a very direct approach. So every once in a while I want to put a certain parameter on this button, and then I don't want to worry about exactly which channel this button is sending on, and so on. So I really like this follow and bind approach of the Alza modular synthesizer, and so I'm wondering why there isn't more software that does that. So the basic goal here is to create a tool that adds this kind of follow and bind capability to pretty much any piece of software. Or I should say, any piece of software with a graphical user interface. So just let's take a quick look at AMS and see how it does that. So I'm going to have to improvise a little bit here since I'm only working with the lower right-hand corner of my screen, so bear with me. So let's take some module that's still visible, okay? I don't know, how about some envelope? All right. And now we can open the control center. And that's, okay, that's coming in. All right, so now if I say follow MIDI, I can wiggle some parameter and nothing happens. Ah, because I haven't hooked them up yet. So. Rule number 5, it works better if you plug it in. Here we go. Now let's try that again. Ah, all right, so I move a slider here and some MIDI parameter appears. Okay, and now, for instance, when I choose this one and say bind, then I can move this slider and which one was that? Ah, that one. I can move the slider and the parameter will listen to it. So essentially that's the kind of behavior that I'd like to have for pretty much any soft synth. Okay. So how am I going to do this? So I'd like to build a little tool in Python that does that, and then extend Python with a little bit of C code as necessary. When dealing with MIDI, I would like to work with the Alza sequencer exclusively. So in particular, I don't really want to read from or write to Dev MIDI. Just work with the Alza sequencer. And then there's the issue of how to communicate with the software that I'm targeting. And when I first started thinking about this project, my initial idea was that I thought I'd just take a window and query it, find out what sort of gadgets, what sort of widgets are in there, and then just target them directly. Would have been nice if it worked, but the problem with that approach is that it's highly sensitive to the choice of toolkit. In some situations, it wouldn't even work at all because some windows just don't tell you what's in there. So in the end, I settled on communicating via sending out or creating plain X events. Now that raises some issues. So first of all, working with ALSA and X is pretty much a Linux-only thing. So, generally I prefer to create portable software. But in this particular case, my reasoning is that if you're already, say, or if you're developing or if you're making music with a Mac or a Windows PC, then chances are that you'll be using some commercial piece of software like Cubase or Logic or so that already handles MIDI in a way that you're probably happy with. So, and I figure this limitation to ALSA and X doesn't hurt too much in this context. A bigger concern is fragility. So since I'm communicating with software just via X events, the software I'm targeting doesn't know anything about MIDI Kinesis. MIDI Kinesis doesn't really know anything about the software; it just clicks somewhere, basically. So you would expect this approach to be rather fragile. You know, you move a window and it breaks. You resize a window and it breaks. So in practice, I actually found that this isn't nearly as much of a problem as I thought it would be. So in spite of sort of this conceptual fragility, I actually find it rather robust in practice. Okay, so in terms of technology, what's going on here? I wanted to create Python bindings for a number of the objects that I'm dealing with here, and in particular ALSA, or the ALSA sequencer, communicates via large structs and unions, and so one of the main thing, or one of the technical steps I went through here, was to create a Python mirror of the C structs and unions that make up ALSA sequencer events, and it's that actually works rather nicely with C types. So once that was done, it was a matter of writing just a wee bit of code, basically convenience functions for creating ALSA sequencer handles and ports and such in C, and plus one loop that would basically poll MIDI devices and find out when new events come in. But I got this entire thing to work with a fairly small amount of C code. And so I said before that the approach would be Linux only. Well, that's only partially true. So I did make a point of putting in a little abstraction layer that would separate the low-level Linux-specific details from some sort of API that'll let you build applications in a manner that no longer really reflects the sort of the Linuxy underpinnings. And So in theory, you could swap out the low level libraries and keep the high level application code intact. Okay, so what are the ingredients here? So there's one Python class that'll handle ALSA sequences for you. It'll create handles and ports and such, and you can work with that with very little effort. So essentially, when you want to work with this, you take this class, you create a subclass. And in the subclass, you just need to override two methods. One of them is called init. Well, that's where you initialize things, such as input ports, output ports, and such. And then there's a callback method that's supposed to be called when an interesting new MIDI event comes in. And just by overwriting those two methods, you can create your own MIDI filters, sequences, whatever, on the fly. The second part here is something that'll actually make things work, that'll actually tie things into a loop, or that'll actually monitor incoming MIDI events and distribute them to the appropriate instances of PySec. And well, just some sample code would look like this. So I'm creating a class called MIDIT, because it behaves like a lot like the venerable Unix T command. So you've got the init method, which just creates one input port, one output port, and the callback method, which just receives an event as a parameter. And this one just passes it right on, and then it prints it to some console or whatever. All pretty straightforward stuff. And so this is actually working Python code. That's all you need to do to get some to get some MIDI filter or so running. So in the end, you create an instance of your sequencer. You feed it to some thread that will monitor incoming events, and you tell it to start. That's it. I guess the deepest point here is this return value here. When you're sharing data between C and Python, there's always the question of who's responsible for freeing up the memory when it's not needed anymore. And the convention here is that the C code will allocate memory for an event struct for you, and it'll pass it to you. And then if you return true, well, one, in your callback method, then that means, okay, I'm done with this event, you can free it up. Otherwise, if you return zero, it means that you tell the surrounding C code, okay, I'm keeping this event and I take responsibility for cleaning it up later. All right, so that was the MIDI side of things. Whoops. That was the MIDI side of things. Now on the side of X, I was a little bit disappointed to find out that in Python, or let's say in commonly available Python libraries, there seems to be no support for a class like Java's and java.awt.robot. So in other words, there didn't seem to be any class for actually creating or capturing X events for instance for regression testing and so on. Okay, so I built something like this. So I'm using the XTest library, which allows you to capture and generate raw events. And once again, I wrapped it into a little abstraction layer that'll let you work with this without actually having to deal with the nitty-gritty details of the XTest library. On the other hand, just as before in the case of ALSA, I did create a full mirror of the pertinent C structs and unions in Python. So if you do want to work with X events in full generality, there's support in there. Nothing's keeping you from it. So there's one class called PyRobot, well, named after java.awt.robot, which lets you capture events, send events, and so on. There's another little convenience class that'll record and replay sequences of events, and that one will play a role in a minute. And once again, you can make things happen with fairly little code. So for instance here, these seven lines of code here just, will record a sequence of X events for you and replay them. All right, so those are the ingredients. And now, let's talk about the top level stuff. So it's a package I called MIDI Kinesis. Actually, originally called it MIDI Map because I'm mapping MIDI events to something, but that name was taken by Microsoft. I actually like MIDI Kinesis better in hindsight. And so what happens? Well, it monitors incoming MIDI events. And so if it receives an event that it already knows what to do with, then it just handles it appropriately. When a new event comes in, it asks you what to do with it. And there are a couple of options you have at this point. So you can treat such a controller as a button that just triggers an action. And in that case, you can record a sequence of X events, mouse motions, mouse drags, keystrokes, whatever. That'll get replayed when you push that button. Pretty straightforward. Then, well, you can map MIDI events to sliders. So as you move a slider on the keyboard, MIDI Kinesis will translate that into mouse dragging motions on the screen in a linear fashion. Well, if you want to target a set of radio buttons, for instance, you can take your range of 128 MIDI values, split it into brackets, and assign clicks on different parts of the screen to those brackets. Well, a counter is pretty straightforward. Sometimes you have those counters with up and down arrows on the side. Here's support for targeting those. Here's one that sounds sort of redundant, a circular dial. So, well, I'll show you examples of all that in a minute. But a lot of soft synths and so on have widgets that you can actually turn by dragging the mouse in a circular motion. And I'm calling that one circular dial because I've also got a linear dial. So, circular dial seems sort of redundant. Linear dial seems sort of paradoxical. But the point here is that a lot of audio software has widgets that actually look like little dials, but in fact the way to deal with them is to click on them and then drag your mouse up or down. So you dial in a linear motion, and this one deals with those. So let's look at a few examples here. Okay, once again, I need to improvise a little bit because of the limited screen size. So let's just start MIDI Kinesis. Well, it's taking its time, there it is. And of course it doesn't fit in. Let's see what we can do here. We don't want to quit right now, don't we? Do we? Okay. So, once again, we need to hook this up. Let's disconnect these. Let's connect this to MIDI Kinesis. And now, let's see what happens, of course. I'll move the slider, and MIDI Kinesis notices this and offers me a set of options. So let's just try this button thing for the first part. Let's just try this button thing first. Let's give it a name. Now there are a couple of options here. So since it's possible that you may want to have a slider or dial behave like a button, you can give it a threshold and you can determine whether you want to trigger it on a rising edge or falling edge or both, and then you can go ahead and record something. So of course now in this little corner of the screen, I don't really have space to do a lot of exciting stuff, but let's just do something silly. I'll just move the mouse around a little bit, and that should do it. So, and now if I move the slider up past the threshold, it should trigger this very mouse motion, or was it? Okay, something. I made a little mistake here. I want to drag the mouse. Just plain mouse motions are ignored. So let's try this again. So now, with the button down, let's move the mouse a little and see what happens. Much better. Okay. So I mean, now this particular example is. Now this particular example is sort of silly, but I did use this for, say, musical purposes. So for instance, at some point I went ahead and mapped some of the buttons on the keyboard to the transport buttons in Rose Garden, and using those I was essentially able to key in or to record a number of tracks without touching the console at all, just by using the buttons on this keyboard, I would activate tracks or clear tracks or reset tracks and so on. And I perceive that to be a bit of an improvement of efficiency. Let's try something else. So let's try one of the stranger things here, namely my little linear dial. So I don't know, I'll take this one right here. Okay, it's rotary knob number 5 in case I forget. So let's target this one right here. And then it asks for a maximum displacement to go through the full range of your dial. So usually I think for hydrogen here, this sort of range should be enough. Well, and now, you see, now as I turn this dial, things will happen. So as I turn this dial, I'm actually controlling this little knob in hydrogen. Okay, so that's the basic functionality. So now let's deal with this fragility issue that I raised earlier on. So one concern is that such mappings break when you move a window. Since media kinesis has no knowledge of what you're actually targeting, it won't notice if you move your target. So, one thing I put in is the notion of reference points. So, for instance, if you have media kinesis target just one window, then you can make the reference point for media kinesis, say, the upper left-hand corner of the window. And when you move that window, you just reset the reference point and your mappings will work just fine. So, and I actually found that to be sufficient to deal with most fragility issues because I move windows all the time, but I don't really resize them that much. Okay, what else? Also, you can open several instances of media kinesis. If you want to target several windows, you can have one instance per window. Like this, every instance will have, once again, its own reference point, so you can move windows independently and things will remain intact. Of course, once you've got several copies running, you might ask whether they might not be tempted to fight with each other. And, there's a mechanism for dealing with that. So, and as a rule, you can filter incoming events. You can set masks for events that you're interested in and others that you're not interested in. So if you pick disjoint masks for separate instances of media kinesis, then they won't interfere with each other. Another way of doing this is to say train one instance of media kinesis and then just tell it not to pay any attention to new events anymore. Wait a second, where did it go? Ah, here. So you can just tell it not to accept new events anymore, and now if I wiggle something that it doesn't know yet, it just won't pay any attention. According to my experience, that was enough to resolve most fragility issues. Okay, so let's wrap this up. It's really supposed to be a fun little project. It certainly started off as one, and it's still meant to be one. One thing I'm hoping to accomplish here is to popularize this follow and bind approach of mapping MIDI events. So I'm hoping that maybe if people try this, or maybe people who develop software just slap on some transparent MIDI capability before actually implementing their own MIDI capability for their software, maybe those people will realize that this follow and bind approach is a lot of fun, and maybe that's the way things should be implemented. Then PyRobot fills a gap that in the Python libraries that I noticed before. So I'm hoping that PyRobot will be useful for regression testing and other purposes independently of this project. Also, I've used my Python bindings for the ALSA sequencer in a number of different contexts apart from MIDI kinesis. So for instance, I wrote a little handler for SysX messages from this keyboard. With this code, as we've seen earlier, you can create MIDI filters on the fly. Finally, there's this idea of creative misuse of MIDI events. So once I got this to work, I wrote a little game of Pong that I could control with my sliders on my keyboard. So there should be some further creative possibilities here. There you go. Thank you.
So thank you, Peter. Any questions from the audience here in-house? Oh yes, we have some. I'll do my usual annual walk up to Dave Phillips.
Dave Phillips, USA. It's a really cool thing. I really like that.
Glad to hear that.
I wondered, is there a way to group a single binding to a number of controllers so that you could control multiple controllers with one binding?
In a sense, that's on my to-do list. So that's something that I'm not doing right now.
Could you put it real high up on the to-do list?
In a sense, it's actually difficult because because when you have your mouse drags, say how do you do three mouse drags at the same time? Mm-hmm. I'll move it up on the to-do list. Okay.
More questions?
Matthias Brüssel from Germany. Is there any way to deal with extended controllers? For instance, 40-bit controllers or the non-standard incremental controllers?
It's something I haven't thought about. And is there room in the, so a question for you. Does the ALSA MIDI event struct contain support for this sort of thing?
I think it's built into the protocol of MIDI. For instance, if you want to have 14-bit controllers, you have, for instance, controller 0 and controller 32, and you add the two 7-bits and get a 14-bit controller.
Okay.
There's little number of devices which support this in hardware, but they exist. And the other way to implement incremental controllers, there are four different ways. One is to have, let's say, 65 as plus one and 63 as minus one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so as I said, I haven't really thought about this issue, but the short answer is if you can glean this extended information from the ALSA MIDI struct that you get from ALSA, then you can access it in the low level Python code, because the low level Python code doesn't throw away any information, and then it shouldn't be too hard to actually use this in the higher level code.
The problem is to detect which is an incremental controller. Instance, I use Ableton Live, and they say, please twist your knob to the left. Mm-hmm. And they auto-detect.
Okay.
And if the detection is not correct, you can say, okay, this is 14-bit controller, or I want this to be mapped as an incremental controller.
Okay.
Future extensions.
I'd have to think about it. I mean, okay. It seems feasible. So as I said, so if it can be gleaned from the information that I get from ALSA, then it's available in Python, and then I could work with it.
Paul Davis, USA. I also think that this is really cool too. I had one question that I wanted to just give one comment back to Matthias. I think the other problem with using 14-bit controllers is that it's a totally broken protocol. And I actually had some conversations with the guys at the MMA last year, and they finally admitted that it doesn't really work properly. So there are actually issues that you'd have to solve in the ALSA sequencer that have to do with which order the MSB and the LSB are sent in, and it's a really hard protocol to actually use, and it's one of the reasons why there are so few devices that do it. One of the problems that has come up with the way that, well, it's not a problem, it's an opportunity.
Okay.
That people have seen with binding ADA and MIDI is that you frequently run out of faders. If you've got a 16 faders, or you're using a little Ederal thing, there's this question of, you know, I've bound all my 16 faders to control this. Oh, now I'd like to bind them all to control this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering whether you have any thoughts within the context of MIDI Kinesis of how you could sort of reuse all the same set of faders. It's almost like window focus.
Okay.
In a way.
Well, it's a problem that I've encountered and that I've sort of solved in a slightly awkward way by using memory banks on this particular machine. So I think this machine has one default bank that's useless for my purposes and 8 banks that can be configured. So I switch banks. So effectively, actually the way it's set up right now, I'd have, what's 8 times 16? I'd have 128 different controllers plus buttons and such. Mm-hmm. So it's slightly awkward because you have to switch modes and you frequently forget what mode you're in, but that's the solution that I've thought of for this problem.
One more question up here.
Martin Romori from Germany. Mm-hmm. Just a tiny suggestion for your next presentation. Why not use MIDI Kinesis for advancing the slides of your talk?
Ah! No, there's a thought, yeah. I'll keep that in mind.
Okay, any more questions? Okay, then I'll think. Thanks for now, Peter.
Thank you.
And I did lie slightly to you early on when I said the lunch break is from 1 to 2. It's wrong. It's now from now. So from 1:30 to 2:30, 12:30 to 1:30. Now we get it. And I'll see you again here at 1:30 with the next talk by Victor Lazzarini. Until then, see you.